Hey, everybody. This episode of Shop Talk is brought to you by Braintree. If you're working on a mobile app and searching for the right payments API, check out the Braintree V.0 SDK. With one simple integration, your customers get every way to pay. To learn more, try out the sandbox. Go to braintreepayments.com/shoptalk. And also, the Accessibility Summit, coming at you from Environments for Humans, one of their online conferences. You and your team can learn how to level up with web and mobile accessibility by taking 2 days with the industry's best accessibility trainers without even leaving the office at the virtual live Accessibility Summit. Register at a11ysummit.com. That'll redirect you to where you need to go. This is a very special episode of Shop Talk. We have a panel that we're going to do. We have four panelists and me and Dave. So there's six people talking. We're talking about lots of cool stuff about styling and the kind of what's going on in the world of styling in the world of JavaScript apps, in a sense. So because it's kind of a very special episode with lots of people talking and voices and opinions and stuff, we're going to not interrupt you during the panel. So thank to our sponsors at the top, and then I'm going to tell you more about these pretty dang excellent sponsors at the end of the show. Everybody, this is Shop Talk Show, and it's kind of a first-time thing for us, a really unique show, something that we've never done before. Dave and I were thinking about doing some different styles of shows, and this is the first of which. It's going to be a panel discussion on some hot topic stuff that's happening in the industry, sort of like how our friends at JS Jabber do it, how they invite kind of a bunch of people on and talk about one particular subject. We're going to borrow their style, high five to them, and have a panel on the subject of I'm just going to name it for now, but that'll be one of the things that we talk about: inline styles, or kind of managing what your websites look like entirely through JavaScript, or at least partially through JavaScript instead of, in a sense, CSS. So we have some people on the show, like Colin McGill.
Hi there.
Hey, hi. Who's going to kind of be helping us introduce what this is all about and stuff, along with Jed Schmidt.
Oh, hey, guys.
Yay. Those are two of the fellas who have been talking about this and kind of liking it. And then just we'll kind of balance it out with more of us who are going to pepper them with questions and see if we can poke holes or whatever we do at panels. I also have with me Nicole Sullivan. Hey, Nicole.
Hey, everybody.
And Jeremy Keith.
Hello, my friends.
Of adactio.tumblr.com fame.
That's the one.
Fantastic. So there's and then of course Dave is here. Hey, Dave.
Hello, I am Dave. I will be playing the role of the browser in this conversation.
This is going to be weird. That's a surprise. So we're just going to roll with that. Int bool. Yeah, that's good. Okay, so this is about inline styles, and let's maybe I'll pass it off to Colin first. Can, because you have a whole talk that you've done on this that I've sat at. This kind of, well, a little bit more background. It happened for me, this kind of introduction to this interesting topic, in New York at Nicole's CSS conf. She particularly invited Colin because he's been talking about this subject, and it's pretty funny to have someone speak at a CSS conference where they're just like, you know what the problem is here? CSS. and then it ended up kind of bleeding over into Jed's Brooklyn.js, where it was also a topic that we talked about in a panel format on stage and talked about a little bit. And Jed has experience with this too, because Jed, you work for Uniqlo, or haven't, right?
Yes, that's correct. Uniqlo, doing the mobile website.
Uniqlo. God. Why do I say it wrong every time?
No, I mean it's a shortening of unique clothing. So
right.
I guess technically you're closer.
Which you taught me the last time you were on this show, and I failed you again.
Episode 146. Come on, you gotta go back and listen.
And Jed has actually like shipped a version of that very large, fancy
mobile site using it, which has since changed, but still he has some experience shipping live products in it. So maybe I'll pass it off to Colin. If you could prepare us a kind of like, can you tell us what we're talking about here?
Yeah, the way that I like to, if you're hearing it for the first time, the easiest way to think about it is SaaS in the browser. You have access, because you're using JavaScript to manage your styles, you have access to things like functions and conditionals and variables, but you don't compile to CSS, which doesn't have those things. You have them all the time in the browser. Anytime you like, you can reference a variable or recompute a style. The other thing that I find useful for explaining this to people who are just coming to it from the first time but may know other web technologies is like D3. And because in React, and this conversation is pretty specific to React and web applications in general. We can talk a little bit about what it means outside of that context. We have some interesting things to say about that too. But generally, D3... re-rendering, if you've used D3 and you've re-rendered your user interface on data changes, and you've been able to recompute inline styles or decide whether to apply a class or not using the D3 interface, that's a good start. Managing styles in JavaScript on every recompute means being able to change styles on every recompute. And that turns out to be very powerful for handling state. And you would do that instead of, in CSS, say that you have a number of classes that are... Michael Chan in the React Europe talk, if you haven't seen that, that's another really good introduction. Is complete, is connected, is expanded, is collapsed, is dash open. You have all of these classes in CSS.
So it helps with state. I feel like we're a little deep in the weeds already. Jed, you've said in the past, I don't know if this is a unique Jed quote, but the worst part about CSS is the first and last S, right?
Yes, exactly. styles are great. Love
and
styles.
Done.
I think one problem with calling it inline styles, I think at least one of the reasons that calling it inline styles doesn't feel quite right for me, is that the inline aspect of a style kind of couches everything in from HTML, whereas CSS is just a serialization of style. HTML is just a serialization of the DOM. So when you're calling it an inline style, you're really focusing on the HTML. And I think modern web apps, HTML is an implementation detail.
When you don't really interact with the HTML either.
HTML is a string.
It's not like
DOM that you're interacting with.
It's not like you're actually writing inline styles. You're writing styles in a like JSON-y format, and that's getting put into the inline style, right?
Right. And I think people who focus on the inline are focusing on the HTML. They're focusing on an artifact of web development and not the actual web development itself.
Okay. So I keep wanting to not to keep this too basic overall, but I want to just do a little bit better job of defining exactly what's happening. I guess the name inline styles came from the fact that the styles, you do need to style things still. We're not saying I shouldn't say we, because we all have different perspectives here, but
that's true.
I think the name inline styles came from an attempt to be almost inflammatory. You know?
Yeah, I think it probably has. Because you still need to style things, right? Nobody's saying we don't need to style things. Of course you need to style things, but instead of styling things through CSS, we're going this inline styles things, we're going to use JavaScript somehow, some way, to ultimately apply styles to things in the DOM, and that manifests itself through a style attribute right on the DOM elements themselves, which when we think of that, we think of inline styles.
But in fact, it's an object, as you say.
Okay, sure. But they still has, it manifests similarly in some ways, like the styles that are applied to these elements do have, like, for example, extremely high specificity. Because they're just applied there. There's nothing else that can override them other than other inline styles or changing the inline styles that they have.
That's right. And there are still overrides. And that actually, in our time that we were talking before the show, we mentioned object.assign, and that's the way in which the inline styles are applied. And the way that works is that you have multiple objects you start out with one object, and then you will assign other objects to that object. And if the property doesn't exist, it'll be created. And if the object does exist, it'll be overridden. And so you can apply multiple objects to a single inline style.
You can still
tag.
Change styles. I mean, of course you can, right?
There, similar to, I think the thing that people would probably connect that with is applying multiple class names in the DOM. You can throw a couple of class names on and you'll get sort of a merge of the two. Is that pretty close to accurate for what it's doing?
It is exactly that.
So
you're just not doing it in the cascade. You're doing it in JavaScript.
That's right.
That's the only difference. Instead of letting the cascade work its magic to figure out what DOM nodes needs what styling, you're being like, we're not going to use the cascade. We're just going to do it ourselves.
That's right.
So technology-wise, we're applying styles through JavaScript. The conversation came about kind of because of React and things associated with React. Can we start there? How about, like, I have div class equals module right now in a lot of the web apps I work on, or, you know, don't chastise me for using the word apps. Ugh, I screwed it up. But a dot module might have...
Sorry, every time somebody mentions apps.
14 minutes. That took 14 minutes.
Oh, man.
Okay. Yep.
So dot module in my CSS will have padding 10 pixels on it, border 1 pixel light gray. Okay, those are the styles that I want anything that has div.module to have. So now in this world of React or whatever, how do I approach that? What's the new approach, or how would you need to deal with that?
So most of what I say will be how you would do it in Radium, because you're going to use some niceness if you're doing this. You're not going to just roll your own implementation of this. There's a lot of edge cases like media queries and vendor prefixing. And so whether you use Radium or another one, I'll talk about it kind of in that vein. But basically you would have a JavaScript module, and you would write a variable, foo equals object, and you would add your key value pairs inside that object, and then you would say module.export foo, and then you would have an object, you would have a modularized JavaScript object that had key value pairs.
So there's some separation of styles already. You're writing something that looks like CSS a little bit, only it's kind of like a JSON-ish version of styles.
That's right. That's optional. You could do this in a React component. You could also do it in a JavaScript module. We tend to put the classes that we want to reuse, classes, not CSS classes, but objects as these style classes. And module, your example of module leans more in that direction. If it was specific to one view in the app and maybe even one element in the app, then we would tend to put that in the component itself and not modularize that.
That's a really interesting point. I didn't realize that you were doing that. I think one of my objections to this has been feeling like you could end up duplicating the same stuff over and over and over again, and that making global changes would be harder because you wouldn't have one place where you could store the meaning of a module. But it sounds like you actually make JavaScript objects that are their main purpose is to export CSS. Am I getting that right?
They're not exporting CSS. They're exporting an object which is effectively the same key value pairs that you would have in CSS.
Sorry, I meant to say exporting styles.
No worries, no worries. And I think that goes to the heart of some of the naming confusion that we'll get to, I'm sure. But I still say it too. And it's been synonymous. I mean, if you go to W3 schools, a lot of things that are just styles.
Why would you do that? Don't go to W3 schools.
Because so many people start there when they want to go on the way. I mean, I guess that's like it's the top hit for so many things. And you find that things that are referred to as CSS or even CSS tricks. I mean, so many things that are referred to as CSS are in fact just styles. Not necessarily specific to the CSS language. And so in this case, you're exporting an object from that module, that JavaScript module, that is then, you could think of it as being applied, or you could think of it as using the inline style attribute on element as a kind of compile target. You know, you're putting all these objects onto that and is just going to render it to key value pairs, just like you would see in it. You would be used to seeing an inline style, but really that's just the end result. It's almost like a, it's almost better to think of it as a compile target because you have all of the same flexibility and more that you would in SAS in terms of modularizing and reusing all of your styles.
So you have this file, instead of style.css, now it's styles.js or whatever, however it works in your thing. And it looks like a bunch of styles, but it's an object instead. And now that you've done this, now you can, I don't know, whatever, grab it and apply it to a React component or whatever. Is React absolutely required for this, or could you kind of roll your own thing? I guess we'll start with that. You know, like is this whole thing just about React?
I think the danger in rolling your own would be that React does a lot of work for you around diffing what you had before and what you have on the next calculation. And the one thing you certainly wouldn't want to do is keep changing your styles, keep updating it every time, even if nothing in particular had changed in it. So with React, you get a lot of that kind of management of change for free. Well, not entirely for free. Nothing's for free. But doing that on your own, I think, would be unwise.
Yeah, it gives you DOM lifecycle management. I think more to the question of whether or not we're only talking about React, I've read some of the documentation of Angular, and it looks like the API for Angular 2, the DOM model is going to be in the same vein, diffing, and I tend to think that's the future of the of web applications, and the future of the web is our UIs that are built in this way.
I would actually extend that. I mean, especially with the React thing, I think React is just early on this. I feel like it's going to take off more. But one of the things that React is doing, you know, they're shipping things like React Native, where, you know, because there's no concept of you need to build an app with CSS and everything is in line, it's much easier to actually build applications that are portable, where all of your logic is in JavaScript, but your render view actually might not even be the DOM. You know, it might just be you know, a native view in an iOS app. And so one of the things about going in line is that it's much easier to do that because you don't have this baggage of parallel tool chains for styles and for logic, and everything is represented in one place. One of the things for me that's you know, people get really angry about, well, what about the separation of concerns? And that's obviously very important. They just don't realize you don't need to separate it on the client. The client is an artifact. If you're separating on the server, that's fine, in my opinion. And I think that's one of the reasons that people get so angry about it is because they see this HTML and it's got all these inline styles and are like, oh, look, everything's jumbled together. It's like they're looking at an artifact of something that actually is well.
So the separation of concerns is an authoring concern, not a
that's right.
tech concern.
That's right.
So I invited Jeremy because of progressive enhancement, and that's probably the drum that Jeremy beats the largest for the longest amount of time, and that I find Jeremy incredibly pragmatic about new technologies and has interesting perspective. What do you know? Styles.js, Jeremy. What's your take on this so far?
Well, I think it's a kind of a testament to the flexibility and the power of the front end stack of, you know, HTML, CSS, and JavaScript that you can do this stuff. That you could choose to, you know, I'm gonna, you know, apply all my styles not using CSS, you know, not using the cascade, not using any of that stuff, but to do it directly using JavaScript. And that's, you know, that's pretty great that you can do that. And if that's suitable for situations, and that's wonderful. And it sounds like it's very suitable for dynamic styles. You know, when the interface is updating, either in response to something the user's doing or just updating very quickly, then yeah, the ability to be updating styles not by, you know, changing state by switching classes, like you were saying, like, you know, is open, is closed, is all that, but by directly manipulating the styling information on those nodes in the DOM, that's really powerful. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, this is the way every website's going to be built from now on, and you know, the browser is an artifact, HTML is an artifact, that the cascading style sheets will also be an artifact. It's just another way of doing it, that if it makes sense to you, that's great. Like, if you're coming from a mindset that thinks that way, that's wonderful, that now there's this option for you. I know plenty of people, you know, you're coming from more software development programming background who've never been able to really get their heads around CSS, right? And to never been able to grasp what it's good at, what it's not so good at, how to use it, you know, in a disciplined way. And so for them, this is great. But if this were to be the way that we build on the web from now on, I think that would be very, very sad indeed, because I think a lot fewer people would be building on the web. And one of the things I love about the web is that it has a relatively low barrier to entry, you know, particularly with declarative languages like HTML and CSS. Now, JavaScript, by default, is going to have a higher learning curve because it's a scripting language. And you're going to want to have some kind of, you know, framework or library to be able to do this stuff, be it React or be it something else. And that's another level above learning JavaScript. And so what I'd be afraid of is that someone who just wants to style something has to now know how to, you know, get their hands in with JavaScript to do this stuff, rather than simply applying styles. Now, I get why dynamic styles, like I say, I can see the benefit.
So there's an example of one of those is, I think Colin mentioned in his talk, imagine the Twitter, like, what's happening box, and you're typing in it, and a lot of state is changing. It's active or not active. Your sentence is so long that the tweet button goes inactive because it's too long now. That type of, like, highly dynamic stated area, right?
Yeah, exactly. And for that kind of stuff, this approach actually seems to make a lot of sense, because it's always felt a bit like we're trying to crowbar CSS into doing something it's not great at when it's trying to react quickly to changes in the interface. But that's a fraction of what's, you know, happening on that particular page. And for the more static stuff, the cascade can be very powerful indeed. And here's the thing, you know, what I find really interesting about React personally is the fact that, yes, it can do this client-side rendering, but it could also be rendering from the server. And that a lot of the JavaScript libraries are heading that way. That you can
perhaps we'll save that just for a minute when we do a progressive enhancement thing. And let's stick with the idea of the fact that, like, let's imagine that Twitter box and the highly dynamic state of that, and how you said that's only a fraction of what's happening on that entire page, which begs the question: can this idea coexist with just some regular old CSS? The one answer being yeah. And the other absolutely being Jed saying, but I've heard, you know, people say, yes, you can ship no CSS whatsoever. You've seen it happen, that's right, true. Colin?
We are doing that right now.
Okay, so those are pretty far extremes, being like, sure, use CSS too, and CSS is dead kind of thing. So maybe, Colin, explain to us, like, the approach for not shipping any CSS at all. Like, what do you get out of that? Do you find yourself... I think that's perfectly fine, or that it's weird to set typography rules in it, or anything of interest there?
It's really interesting. So with Radium, we have a style tag that you can put into the DOM. And so in this case, managing all of your styles with JavaScript, you could also insert a style tag. And we do that for normalization resets, where globals make sense, where you want to affect every list item, things like that. I think there's a strong case for using globals there. I think there's a less strong case for CSS as a technology in the long run. And the way that I like to think about that is in terms of path dependency.
How would you handle globals, though, if you didn't have... if you didn't have a style attribute for something like a reset?
So that style attribute's never going away. So let's assume for the sake of this conversation that we're talking about CSS occupying maybe 3 to 5% of our web app or of our website's logic, and the other 95% being done in this inline styles methodology. I think the argument that we're going to use none is maybe it's unhelpfully limiting, because there are cases for globals and resets. Sorry, I have a fire truck going by. and so we are in fact not using resets. So in our app, we are actually shipping none. We are not using the style tag. But what you get from that is you get access to your variables all the time. One really obvious consequence of that is that we can theme whenever we want. And we can swap out variables programmatically. And so you can retheme your application on the client side at any time. You don't have to change style sheets. You can simply recompute based on a mouse position. And you could recompute the entire theme of your app in real time on the client in an interpreted way in response to mouse movement or hover. You obviously wouldn't want to do that. That would be a rainbow disco party. But it proves a certain point about the power and flexibility of bringing all of the styles into JS, because you now have all of the variable infrastructure that you were using in SAS, but it's on the client. And I think that's, to me, this year, this next year and a half, couple of years, I think most of the audience for this are people who are using SAS now on teams where there is a lot of work being done on the JavaScript side to add and remove these classes. Because it's important to remember that anytime you're building up CSS classes, if they're dynamic at all...
Class selectors, there's no such thing as a CSS class.
Okay, sure. If you're building up CSS selectors, then there's someone on the other side of that, on the JS side, who's grabbing those and putting them into the DOM and taking them out.
Right, it seems arbitrarily separated, just like how it's so celebrated in React that the HTML and the JavaScript have finally, you know, gotten together and hang out together. You're saying it's kind of nice to just bring the styles in as well?
It's very nice. It's extremely expressive. And I tend to think that any team that's on SAS right now has reason to look at this. And if you aren't, if we're really talking about a static website, and if we're really talking about people who want a low barrier of entry to building on the web, don't want to use JS at all, I'll concede all those sites. I tend to think that those sites are going to be handled more and more by sites like Squarespace and the Grid.
I don't think that's fair, because I don't think that it's a site that's handled that way. I think it's a team of people with different skill sets, right? And so, you know, for example, on my team, we have folks who are in the like very comfortable in CSS range and can, you know, muddle through and make things work in jQuery kind of level of JavaScript. And then we have folks who are like super JavaScripty and struggle a bit with CSS. So I don't think it's about this team or that product going one way or the other. It's about how do we make it work for all the different kinds of folks that we have on a team.
I agree.
I want to interject. I'm keeping score, and I'm going to award 2 points to Gryffindor for the use of Grid.io.
So that doesn't get its own sound, though.
Perhaps bringing all the styles in and not using CSS at all, I can imagine that it kind of levels the specificity playing field a bit. I would think mixing the two means that some of my styles are now applied with inline styles and some of them aren't. And I just can imagine that being obnoxious. I guess I don't have any real world experience, but it seems like having this, some styles are way at the top of the specificity spectrum and some are way down at the bottom.
I think specificity is one of those things that you just stop caring about. I mean, you know, the inline styles are by default, unless you're using crazy CSS, going to override your CSS anyway. So I don't see that as a big concern. And at least for me, I think they can totally coexist. I actually just posted a link in our little chat there saying how Neanderthals and Homo sapiens coexisted for thousands of years.
Okay.
There is prior art there.
Let me take a guess of which category you think yourself is in.
I'm not in either. We're talking about the technology. But I think, yeah, I mean, you know, as more and more, listen, I mean, the problem with CSS is that it's static, right? It's just you write your CSS and you can write all these tools on the server to handle all of these cases in the client. But what you really want is just to be able to respond in the client. And so what's interesting to me is even if you're not using SAS and you're just using CSS, you're probably using BEM or one of these things that's basically demotes the cascade anyway. You're going to be, you know, using some sort of naming convention that basically says, okay, this one really long class name with all these like underscores and hyphens applies to these DOM nodes. And so basically, once you're taking out the actual querying of the cascade and you're literally just, it's a class to element map, you're really not using CSS anymore. You're really just using styles. And as long as you're doing that, it's so much easier to actually just take those styles and bring them back into your application.
Isn't that related? Didn't all that stuff start with Nicole in a sense? Or were you kind of early in this world of, you know, I don't know that OOCSS was anti-cascade necessarily, but it was a little bit, right? It was that we need to manage this.
And anti-specificity for sure. Like, I think that, well, so Paul Irish and I had an interesting discussion about this when we were actually on the CSS Conf program committee together. I was sort of like, what is this inline styles business? What are they solving for? Like, relatively maintainable CSS is a solved problem, was my perspective. And Paul fairly brought up the point that, like, yeah, sure, I've been saying it for 6 or 7 years now, but that it hasn't gotten there. And so if that's the case, then, you know, maybe CSS is missing a few things that would have made it more easy for, you know, an average web team to maintain.
So if you're real good at CSS, it's a solved problem. But just the world hasn't gotten real good at CSS, perhaps.
I guess, but if you have to be real good to write decent code, I don't know. That, I mean, this is part of, you know, deciding to have Colin speak at CSS Conf, where I was like, I don't know, this really rubs me the wrong way, this whole inline styles business. But at the same time, like, admitting that if it rubs me the wrong way and I'm someone that's been steeped in the technology for years, that probably means I need to kind of open my mind to it for a bit and give it a try.
Something that everyone has alluded to a little bit is the leveling up in this, the learning curve, and what is it like for new devs working? Can you hire people that can do this? Can you, like, is the learning curve kind of too high to be practical? Is it something you can jump into right away? What's up with that?
I would love to speak to that. Actually, we have found onboarding with this, even with junior developers, incredibly easy. And with designers, we're simply exposing a different API for them to communicate what styles they want to us. We give them a module. It's very much like a SAS module, and that's where fonts go, and this is where variables go, and this is where grid goes. And we have much more flexibility, and they have much more flexibility with when and how those styles are applied, in the sense that there's less volleyball, there's less, hey, I need it to look like this. Oh, but it's then on you to implement X, Y, or Z JS to make that happen. I think that there's more integration with the teams that I've seen that immediately. And I've seen less focus on conversations that are about these naming conventions, which I see the naming conventions as a kind of crutch, because they are brittle in the long run to have to rely on people following these patterns. They're relatively arbitrary and unenforceable, and people come up with their own that makes sense to them, and so it seems like a language problem to me.
When you have these naming conventions like BEM and stuff, that basically, in when you're doing it in JavaScript, gets replaced with a path that you're, like, you know, when you're looking for whatever, wherever you keep your styles, you're going to have a, you know, common JS require. And so you're going to have a path. And one of the nice things about that is when you're running your server on the app, like, if you have the wrong path, it's actually going to blow up. Like, your code's actually going to blow up, and it's going to tell you. So you don't have to wait until runtime where, like, oh, all of a sudden it doesn't match. Like, you'll know because your app won't run, which is nice. So I think that's one of the pluses. One of the things about tooling, so there is a lot of pushback. People are very used to using CSS, and, you know, I feel like a lot of people feel like, you know, a tool is being taken from them. In my opinion, I think it's actually, for designer folk, I think it's actually, in the long run, better to use JavaScript, because, first of all, they're not using, like, really heavy JavaScript. This is literally just object notation, right? You're just writing objects, right? So start with that. That's a really easy thing. And one of the cool things about that is, okay, well, now you can actually write JavaScript. The problem is, if you're using something like SAS and you want to level up from CSS and deeper into SAS, now you're learning SAS, and now SAS is growing and it's becoming bigger and bigger and bigger, but SAS will never be as powerful as JavaScript. It can't be, because it's compiled on the server, right? JavaScript is dynamic. It's in the DOM. It's in the browser. So I think one of the nice things about doing something with inline styles is that it actually gives designers a way to actually start learning JavaScript. So their path upwards is in JavaScript and not in a language that has a very specific and limited purpose, in my opinion.
That's already happening for us too. Yeah, that's a great point.
So Jeremy is a part of Clear Left, an agency. Are you getting applications for new employees that don't know CSS? They only know styles in JavaScript? I'm kind of kidding, but...
We certainly get applications from people who, I would say, don't know JavaScript, but only know particular libraries or frameworks in JavaScript. But no, CSS is very much around. But we tend to not hire for a particular, you know, tool like, you know, Angular or React or any of this. We'd be hiring for, you know, the ability to learn stuff. So if you know, adding styles dynamically using JavaScript is a technique that's going to work on any particular project, then we'd be hiring for someone who could do that on that project. The idea that it would then apply universally to every project we ever do from then on seems unlikely to me, in that in my experience, every project's different and every project maybe needs a different solution. And, you know, like I said, I can see the appeal of this, particularly with dynamically changing styles. But on other projects, that's, you know, less important. So a different technique might be required. And like I say, it's a testament to the flexibility of front-end technologies that we don't have to decide. We don't have to say, well, from now on, this is how things are going to go. We're not going to use CSS anymore. We're going to apply all our styles using, you know, JavaScript. We can pick and choose. We can say, on this particular project, this is the right way to go. And on that particular project, that's the right way to go. And that's why when we're hiring, it doesn't make sense to say we're looking for someone who knows, you know, framework X or technology Z, because in 6 months, we're going to need, you know, different skills. It's, you know, it's like those ridiculous job ads where they're looking for, you know, Flash and Illustrator. And they put it, you know, you're listing off software. And it's not the software that matters. It's the skills that matter, right?
It's always with the software. It's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like to hire solely based on frameworks that have been around for 6 months. So. How I approach all hiring decisions.
But I also ask for 2 years experience in those frameworks.
Yeah, yes. I think 8 years experience, what could go wrong?
Desired.
Yeah.
Yeah, what could go wrong as a business? Seriously.
I saw Nicole speak at Event Apart, and you talked about literally styling modules in React, but this stuff wasn't really part of the conversation, right? So you're kind of like liking React, right? And liking I guess for the most part. Could you tell us about that? And are you starting to be convinced a little bit, or still leery of this idea, Nicole?
I am skeptical and also interested. So I guess for me, it's about finding the points where I get a lot out of doing it in a more inline way, and using it then. So I really like React, and I had used Angular before, and I just got frustrated with Angular at how there was no place where the state of my module or object seemed to be stored. So you have like ng classes, ng switches, ng hide, ng shows, and like ng all the things, and somehow, and then you have your style sheets as well, and somehow with all of those parts, you're supposed to know what like state your actual module's in. So I had a sortable table module where you could click on the headers and it would sort the contents inside, and it ended up getting into weird states where it'd be like half in edit mode and half in like view mode. And part of why that happened is because, you know, with Angular having so many different ways of defining the state, it ended up just really hard to tell where it was at any given point. And part of that was my own inexperience with Angular, but React really felt like a breath of fresh air, because rather than having to learn this like ng language, I was just writing plain old JavaScript, and it looked like JavaScript. And I started to level up in JavaScript, which felt good, because after a lot of years, I was frustrated that that hadn't happened sooner, basically. And now we don't tend to use inline styles. We tend to have a style sheet associated with each module that's separate. And then we use inline styles for anything that's dynamically updating. So, you know, animations that need JavaScript control, or, you know, anything where we would want to dynamically compute what the value is going to be.
Oh, so you're living this a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the edge cases for me have been around like media queries, for example. You know,
that's
the browser,
a classic one, right? Because it's like there's no way to do an inline style media query, right?
There is.
You can actually. Yeah. but it means you have to calculate the media query in JavaScript, right? So that you know whether in JavaScript what width you're at presently. And I guess I'm always a little bit leery when I think, hey, there's something the browser would give me for free that I would just get to use and would be relatively low cost, wouldn't take up any space in the sort of JavaScript queue of things going on. And here I'm going to start doing that in JavaScript when it could sure. have been in the CSS.
So you're not really faking it, because there's some kind of like evaluate media query JavaScript API kind of thingy.
Is it like a window.match media? Is that what's happening?
And then you
And then is it reevaluated on resize? Or?
Well, that's the thing. Should you reevaluate it on resize or should you not? Should you just do it once? It's a really good question. I don't know the answer to. Like, if you want
to, if it wants to behave like a media query does.
You do, but then how many of your users are like really resizing their browser that aren't that aren't other web developers going, ooh, look,
I guess
responsive.
You always got to watch it when you're deciding whether or not to attach a window on resize event, right? Because that's like janky territory.
Well, you're going to have to throttle it or yeah.
You'll well, end up. I mean, well, so one of the things that React does is, you know, they give this should component update. So basically you can tell the component whether or not to update based on something calling. So that function basically becomes a no-op. And so I imagine anyone who's doing stuff like this is probably using an approach like that.
Okay.
So in should component update, you just set a bunch of listeners.
You return a Boolean. Should it update? Yes or no? If no, it just skips the whole thing. It doesn't actually recompute that subtree.
Okay. And interesting. Formidable Labs in Seattle, where we started designing the API and building Radium, and Alex Land did a lot of really great work on that out here. That is an API for handling media queries and inline styles in React in a much cleaner way that's more familiar to designers as well. Hover pseudo states as well, hover focus. Those states are just handled. You can just write them in objects as strings, string, colon, hover, and it's a familiar syntax.
So I guess is the pardon my ignorance here, but so I have the styles export, right, the module, and is that, I guess, evaluated before it hits my component? Is it evaluated at runtime, like with the component? Like when the component's rendering, does it then like evaluate the styles, or are the styles kind of pre-evaluated, like pre-processed essentially?
For me,
anyone help me.
The pre-processing is just a server render. So, you know, when you're using something like React, it's really easy to render on the server. So basically, there's no pre-processing formally with React. The idea is, you know, the server is just the first render. And so what React will do is you'll render, so like, you know, you compute some state, and like, you know, if you're doing something like media queries, like you don't have access to, you know, the size of the browser or anything like that. So you would have to just choose a default, but it would render, and that would render it to inline styles or whatever, send it to the client, and then React would reconciliate that. And then every time some state changes, it's going to affect that component. It's going to recalculate it. Does that make sense?
So was that Dave? Okay. Was that David that asked that question?
Yes.
So, David, think about it like this. You could also have a function in that module that returns a JavaScript object, and you could invoke that function and then access the properties on that. And you could have any number of checks and other functions firing in that module that maybe it calls out to globals to check for fonts. And if you change variables somewhere else, maybe you even have it in a store in React, you can do whatever you want. You could recompute it, or you could just have a bunch of static key value pairs that you return to the object to apply to the style. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like, or could it exist at the global CSS level or the component level is sort of what you're in, whatever makes sense there.
It's as flexible as anything else you could do in JavaScript. If you wanted to recompute something, then you can. If you wanted it to be recomputed every time the component rendered, then you could do that.
Okay. All right. Thanks. I just interested in the details.
So to give a voice to the world here in this conversation, I have a poll, a currently running poll on CSS Tricks in the sidebar. If you're viewing it on a large device, or
excellent.
down the old tube of content, as they say, if you're on a small screen device, there's a poll, and you can click a radio button and hit vote, and people can voice what they think about inline styles. The question reads, what's your take on managing styles entirely in JavaScript? Which I think is a fair-ish way to quote this question, says it doesn't explicitly call out anything, but that's exactly what's going on.
It's actually really fair.
Thank you.
Given what you could have done here,
right? Because if you say inline styles, you're gonna change the opinion in some way because it's kind of a dirty word. In fact, I remember talking about it with Nicole, I think, at the conference. We're like, maybe we should, you know, at the time we're reacting so negatively to it. Like, maybe we should try to get this inline styles name to stick because it's... <'cause> it's
That's not a bad strategy.
Yeah.
managing is the right word because you're really managing styles. Sometimes it's appropriate to put a style tag in and use CSS. Maybe it's a CSS3 animation that you'd like to have so managing is really the right way to think about it.
Maybe it's an at font face rule. Ooh, no way to do that one. Burn. Okay.
You want to dynamically change your font. Yeah. Free app that dynamically changes its fonts regularly on hover.
I've so done that before. I was trolling my designers, and so I made all the fonts change to Comic Sans on hover.
Here are the ways that at the moment I click this button, 16,451 people have voted. It's been up for a month or something on CSS Tricks, so it's been a while.
I'm sorry, on what tricks?
Managing styles, Jed.
I just wonder if there's a bias. I don't know. Just theoretically.
Just shish. I just wanted to say this. I'm not, you know, it's just a poll, and yes, of course there's some bias. Of course, you know, I didn't ask for anybody to write in random opinions, really. There's an article that I've tried to be fair-ish on CSS Tricks that accompanies the poll, but let me just do the poll, the answers, just because I think it frames how people are feeling about this worldwide, kind of. The highest one is the one that's most against the concept. The answer was, are you insane? This is an awful idea, at 49%. Of all voters. Like it or not, like, people aren't loving the idea, at least in this biased poll.
It's true.
The next highest one is at 26% says, it kind of rubs me the wrong way, but I'm trying to be open-minded about it, which is kind of sort of the sentiment Nicole said, you know, like I don't know, you're doing some of this stuff but are cautiously skeptic or whatever, however you say that, the nicest way possible. the next one is a positive sentiment at 14%. People said, I think it's an interesting idea and makes sense in some situations. So people that are like, yeah, which I guess is closer to the Jeremy's perspective. The tide are the two, well, the totally neutral at 5%. Like, I don't care. And then 5% of people, which is higher than I kind of thought it would be, whereas people are just like, best idea ever, or, well, whatever. It actually says, I love it, I'm all in, CSS is over, which was the title of one of Colin's slides, I believe.
Is that true?
It's probably pretty close.
Yeah.
It sounds like something you would say.
Well,
And do you really believe that, Colin? Do you really believe that CSS is over? Everything's going to be done. All styles will be managed through JavaScript from here on out.
Yeah.
Okay, then.
Hold on. Maybe CSS is still useful, but I mean, if you look at the approaches to CSS that I like the most are ones that are actually, you're still managing your styles entirely in JavaScript, and then CSS is an implementation detail. So, for example, if like a lot of recurring inline styles occur over and over again, well, before the server render or after the server render, you iterate over your DOM, pull those into a style sheet, and put that style sheet on your page. Does that make sense? So technically you're using CSS, but you're not authoring in CSS.
Right, but there you've got a much bigger problem, which is that you're rendering everything using JavaScript, not just the CSS, but the HTML as well, right?
On the server? Well, you're rendering it with some language on the server. If you want logic on the server, you're going to need a language. Why not JavaScript?
Okay. Yeah, see, if we're talking about server side, then yeah, I agree that how you manage your styles, whether it's you ship a style sheet or a style block in the head of a document along with your HTML, and that's how you do it, or whether you put in inline styles or you put styles, you know, directly in the DOM, and that's what you send from the server. Yeah, I mean, that's basically plumbing, right? Whether you do one or the other. And I can see arguments for both. You know, you get the benefits of the cascade if you do it one way, you get the specificity, you know, avoidance if you do it the other way. And that's great. So I get that when you're shipping from the server. I think when you start to do everything in the client, right, where you're rendering everything in the client, and so now you've made everything dependent on JavaScript, not just the CSS, but also the content itself, that's where it gets a bit more problematic. And certainly there's certain types of applications where you might say, yeah, okay, that's fine, we're going to do everything in the client, but what you're really doing is you're doing everything in a subset of clients. You're saying, okay, a certain number of browsers will get to complete this task, access this information, whatever it might be, and another subset that won't be able to get everything that the most modern JavaScript frameworks and libraries provide.
I disagree with that. There's nothing that progressive enhancement is awesome. In fact, this to me makes it easier. You don't have to worry about CSS and like what's your critical path styles and like how do I extract those and put them somewhere. You don't have to worry about any of that. So I think what people don't understand is when we say JavaScript, we're not saying client-side JavaScript. We're saying JavaScript everywhere, right? And the server is a big, big part of that. So yes, I totally agree. You shouldn't ship an empty body and just render everything in JavaScript right now. That makes
right,
no sense,
right?
Cool. But the thing is, there's no reason to use, I mean, as long as you're using a templating language in Ruby or Python or whatever you're using, why not make that JavaScript? And as long as you're doing that, well, why not use actually the same code? And at that point, to me, a lot of the arguments don't really stand up.
Yeah, a lot of the React's capacity for progressive enhancement is very, very good. And we're working on, the only thing left on the roadmap for Radium is to get media queries working on the server, which we're working on that now, and strategies for that. But
it doesn't seem obvious to me. So can you do just a few minutes of how that, when I think of React and when I play with it, it's super client-y. What does it look like to do server side React?
I mean, that's what's really cool about it, actually, is that it doesn't look any different at all, which is what's really great. Like, you know, at my company, we definitely have a deep Ruby background. And so in a lot of cases, we were sort of doing our server side renders in Ruby and Rails and HAML templates. And then on the client side, we were sort of taking that over with Angular or whatever framework and then doing subsequent renders and DOM updates in the client side. And that's super, super painful because it, you know, you basically have a bundle of complexity that you have to manage somewhere, right? Like you can't not have it complexity. Something needs to build these views. But we, by doing it in HAML on the server and doing it in JavaScript on the client, we're basically taking our complexity and be like, what if we doubled it and put it in both places? Whereas, which is, you know, a super painful. So you have to make sure they're staying up to date, that they match, that the HAML's outputting the right ng whatevers. And granted, none of this was a good idea of how to do it, but being able to switch to using React and being able to have it be truly isomorphic so we weren't having to rewrite anything for the server renders was really powerful.
Does Nicole get a sound effect for isomorphic? I think she's the person to actually use the word.
Yeah. I'm taking a drink.
take a drink. Everyone takes a drink. Isomorphic. All right, I got a sound effect.
I get crickets? Aw.
Isomorphic just triggers this every time you say
like
it.
I said, I mean, if we're talking about server rendered, then yeah, I think that how you manage your styles is basically plumbing because, like I said, what ends up getting sent down the pipe is, you know,
artifacts
applied to DOM elements, and it doesn't matter whether you've written those in a CSS file or whether you wrote those in a JavaScript file. But it strikes me if you're doing that, then it wouldn't take much to. So currently, you've got like you say styles.js, right? And that's where you write your styles, and then they get applied into the component. It wouldn't be much more work to write one more level of abstractions where you could write you could have another file like styles.css. And your JavaScript could parse through that stuff, right?
Why?
Extract the styles.
Why are you doing
and then apply
this?
Them
why
directly
would you do that?
To
you're just making your life harder.
Because for some people, JavaScript is not necessarily the way that makes sense to them. And the barrier to entry is going to be lower for something more declarative. And the idea of forcing those people to have to learn a programming language when, you know, they want to style how something looks and there's an existing vocabulary that makes sense to them. You know, I don't like the idea that we're going to have to make everybody learn a programming language to do a declarative language.
Well, okay, hold on. Can we compromise and not say JavaScript and say JSON?
Yeah, JSON is the better word here.
Okay.
The JSON is declarative, is it not? I mean, in the same way CSS is. I mean, a CSS file is a list of maps, a selector, and a block has key values. That's what a CSS file is, right? I mean, to write that in JavaScript, or at least in JSON, those concepts are the same. We're not asking anyone to learn functional programming.
But this
or
is
map
exactly what I'm saying. If they're that close, it's only a tiny step to have one more level of abstraction where you can literally write it in the syntax you're familiar
Jeremy,
with.
Jeremy, we're actually at that level of abstraction. You know, we're, the way we're doing it now is how you're talking about doing it. And I would say the positives of it are that we still have SAS files. Our designers can still edit them. We still have a variables file that they can make a lot of updates on without needing to understand exactly how that gets consumed by the modules. The downsides are that we don't have great separation of styles. I mean, we do because we try and we make it that way. But especially when we roll on new people, it's fairly common for them to accidentally like change a whole swath of our styles because they haven't understood that they're used in multiple places. So I would say like on the positive, yes, they can participate. And on the negative, yeah, sometimes things get messed up.
I think that a broader question, the deeper point that you're making, though, I don't agree with the details of what you're saying, but I do agree with the thrust of it, which is this going to be very hard for new people to get started if they're trying to build their own website? I mean, is that really the essence, or am I misrepresenting you?
Yeah, that's one of my concerns. Yeah.
So I think that on the progressive enhancement side, React is actually really good because you can render down to a string.
I think that's
and send
a completely
that, send
separate
that
issue. That's a completely
yeah,
separate
exactly,
issue.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. And I think that one, to me, we've got a strong case for that in React. But in
yeah,
terms
I agree.
Of
React
being,
is actually great for progressive enhancement because, as you say, you can render it from the server. But that's not the
right.
issue here.
It's a separate issue, right? So yeah. So in terms of it being hard for newbies, anything with a client side build is going to be difficult. For people out of the box, and I think that does include an asset pipeline, that the kind of asset pipelines that we see with Rails or we see with Browserify or with even with just compiling SAS down from command line, that's a more manual step and maybe a little bit less intimidating, but still does require some know-how. And so I think I tend to think that on teams where the JavaScript infrastructure is being taken care of by others, by other developers, or maybe a senior dev, there's no change whatsoever in writing key value pairs. There just is simply more expressiveness in terms of having all of your variables available, having ternaries and conditionals available, having functions available, things like that.
So kind of as I suspected here, there's slightly more agreement than disagreement, because there's all the like easy ones are like, but what about the inline styles kind of has an answer for, you know, you're like, what about media queries? There's an answer for that. What about progressive enhancement? There's an answer for it. What about, you know, all these things that we throw out? There tends to be an answer for, but the ones that there aren't are the bigger, more philosophical questions, like is this good for people or not, which are probably we're probably not going to solve on this panel necessarily. What about
I think it's like I said, I think this is great because it's a testament to how many different ways you can do anything on the web, really, right? That you can finagle CSS or JavaScript or HTML to do all kinds of stuff, and that's great. What I'm not keen on is like somebody has a way that works for them and then tries to get everyone else to work the same way that they do. That I find rubs me the wrong way a bit, because, you know, it's a big web out there, it's a big world out there, and there's room for lots of different approaches and lots of different ways of building and making. And, you know, what's good for one person could be different for another. You know, people talk about the problem with CSS, but usually it's quite subjective. It's more like the problem I have with CSS, right? And for someone else, the things you're describing as a problem, they describe as a boon, as a benefit. These are actually powerful features that make sense to me and that work for me. So I just think, you know, there's room for many, many, many different ways. There's no one approach. There's no one framework. There's no one library that's, you know, going to win or...
unless it's progressive enhancement,
an end
right?
Game. That's just an approach, you know.
Okay. Well, I would say that my ability to you know try to get people to work the way I do is extremely limited, and programmers are extremely opinionated about their stacks. But I will say this: we had 10,000 downloads in Radium last month, and it's hockey sticked. I mean, we've gotten great traction on the library, and it's you know it's catching fire. So this is completely organic if it takes off.
So there's more things we could talk about, but we're approaching an hour, so I think we're gonna do a last words kind of thing. Web browser, Dave, do you have any kind of thoughts that have been circling in your head as a wrap-up-y kind of?
This sounds simple. All you have to do is create a whole node app to manage your styles. Wow. We really solved a problem, guys and gals.
Okay, that's the browser's take. Colin, final words.
Do feel free to reach out to me on Twitter. I'm at Colin McGill, and I'm happy to answer questions on React and Radium.
Right. So is actually building websites using this, so I can answer questions from a practitioner's standpoint. Jed, similar?
Yeah. I mean, just, you know, keep an open mind. There's a lot of people who are trying to force, you know, what they consider is the correct opinion. Judging by the poll, I think it's pretty obvious which side most of those people are on. But yeah, just keep an open mind and find something that works for you. I know it doesn't smell great right away, and you're like, oh, this looks awful. Well, don't look at the HTML. The HTML is an artifact. I don't mean it's old. When I say an artifact, it's not old, but the HTML is not where you're authoring. Right? Look at where you're authoring and look at that experience.
You don't minified. You don't write in minified JS, right?
Right, yeah, or minified HTML too, or CSS for that matter. So yeah, just keep an open mind and look at, just, you know, I realize it's blasphemy to say that, you know, maybe this is not a tool that's useful anymore. It just seems really like a strong opinion, but more and more I believe it. And I think one of the ways that the web can evolve is by when we're adding these new tools. You know, you can't just add tools forever. At some point you have to like prune the tool chain that you have. And I think using inline styles and using this kind of approach is one way to do that.
Wonderful. Nicole, do you have some wrap-up thoughts?
Yeah, I would say that folks should give it a try, which is a little bit hard because all of the examples that are out there tend to be written for more programmer types. But what's cool to me about this approach is that, you know, I think SAS has often been sort of the gateway for front-end folks to learn programming, and that's great, but SAS is a terrible programming language. And it has to be because it has to live in CSS and it has to compile to CSS. So they don't have a lot of choices. They've done the best they could with what was possible. And so what I would say is when you're writing your styles in JavaScript, what you're accidentally learning isn't some weird SAS made up language. It's actual JavaScript. So give it a try. And even if you hate it, you might accidentally get better at JavaScript.
It was not quite the answer I was. Nicole, you're supposed to be on the other side.
Oh, I can do that one too. can I have a second wrap up?
Cool. I mean, we're all out of time, so sorry about that.
I mean, sorry, your wrap up has already been compiled. Oh. It's static.
No, I mean the other side of it is definitely that, you know, you can overuse something. Like this is a tool, and I think it makes sense in certain circumstances. But to say that you need to rewrite your entire app to have no styles is at this point certainly premature.
Jeremy, you've given us some pragmatism already, but do you have some final words?
Yeah, I would say, you know, investigate this tool like the way you would investigate any other tool to add to your arsenal of tools so that you can draw on it when the time is right, when it's for the right project. But it's always good to have many tools at your disposal, because if all you have is a hammer, everything starts to look like a nail.
I would just like to say that all of the articles on CSS tricks are still valid. You just have to replace the semicolons with commas. So that's fine. Everything is fine.
That easy.
Okay, that'll wrap it up. Let us know what you think of our panel format, if you enjoyed the show or whatever. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Shop Talk Show. It was brought to you interruption-free, and now here I am at the end to tell you about the sponsors that make Shop Talk Show possible. They are pretty darn wonderful at that. One of them is the Accessibility Summit, brought to you by Environments for Humans. When you go to it, now it's one of the online conferences by Environments for Humans where you can attend it like through your web browser, which is cool. As you're watching it, they're recorded and then you have access to those forever, which is really cool. They say life happens. That's why we include full access to the recordings of each session in addition to copies of the presenter's slides and event recording. So like even if you miss one in the middle of the day because you want to go to lunch at a weird time or whatever, no problem. You didn't really miss it because you can go watch it again later. From accessibility in the Apple Watch to agile workflows, spend some time with the accessible experts and find inspiration and practical knowledge you need to make your web presence truly universal. All new talks on modern accessibility tips and techniques from industry leaders will leave you with a fresh perspective and the inspiration to build accessibly in all your projects from the ground up. Pretty darn cool. That's a11ysummit.com to sign up for that online conference. Is coming up pretty darn great. And the show is also brought to you by Braintree. Braintree is an online payments API, right? So it's kind of a product of PayPal. So you use Braintree's APIs, but through them, then you can take PayPal, you can take Apple Pay, you can take Android Pay coming up, you can take Venmo, Bitcoin, whatever is next, because they can add stuff and you can just automatically start using it because you're using the Braintree APIs. Pretty darn cool. They have an SDK for getting started with that. Literally using them at CodePen and some project work that we're starting to switch to them because we're pretty darn excited about it. I know Tim, our guy who's working on this project, couldn't be more excited about switching to Braintree. So that's pretty cool. You can call them and they'll help you integrate it if you want, which is pretty amazing, I think. The SDKs are available in .NET, Node, Java, Perl, PHP, Python, Ruby, lots of documentation. It can be really, really simple. They say 10 lines of code can get you going. So pretty cool. Thanks to both of our sponsors for sponsoring Shop Talk, and let us know what you think about the panel format and all that stuff.
Oh, I have a sound effect to wrap up the show. Thanks, everybody, for listening.